Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to another edition of Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. It's always fun to catch up with Coach. I always get a delayed start here, Coach, because I don't get to catch up with you that often outside of the podcast. So for like a quick 10 minutes, you know, Tanner comes in here and he's talking about milking cows and stuff. And we get to talk, and then you and I get to talk a little bit. And then, bam, we got to get to the podcast because you jump on. Of course, we do this on a Wednesday morning. You jump on with the Good Morning NoCo crew, our morning show here at 8 o'clock. So I really enjoy the 4 minutes we get to converse even outside of this podcast, too.
I've started calling this just media day, my media day.
Yeah.
I used to call it I got to do the podcast or get to do the podcast or whatever. I used to say that to my wife or the guys at work, you know, to remind them because I get in a little later on this morning. They're all over there right now meeting and watching film and everything. And so I get in about an hour later than most of the coaches. And so I'll just say, oh, this is my media day because it's become that, right? I'm just over here, feel like for a day,
yeah.
I'm part of the team.
Yeah. You know? Well, you are. And we got to get you a code at some point. Tanner just sends you a code. We got to get you a card so you can just start coming in. You can enter through the back door on the south side of the building and feel like you're an employee here.
Oh, that'd be cool because it feels pretty sketch. I'm like the only one out there in the front parking lot. Nothing's open anywhere. It's just kind of some stragglers walking around in the streets.
Well, it's about ready to get busier, Coach, and I gotta pull back the curtain here. You've seen the layout of the building, of course. You've seen across the hallway. It's basically the mirror copy of this part. You know, that part of the building looks just like this. Nobody's in it because we just rent out this space here. We've been in here for 3 years now, and we've been by ourselves, living life. You know, just running around, all the guys, no problem. Sounds like they found somebody to take the other side there. So we're going to have to mind our P's and Q's a little bit more. It's going to be odd. We used to be in a building where we were all by ourselves. We've never had to, like, cohabitate with anybody. So this is – especially for a guy like Micah. You've met him. This is going to be a really interesting journey for us here at the station.
That's interesting because I had this impression because of my experience during my time at BYU, who has a major – TV and media building, and I had a weekly show there, but that was like completely on lockdown. Nobody could walk in there, and nobody that didn't have a credential could be in there.
Yeah.
And so and it was explained to me that, and maybe particularly also because it's, you know, a Mormon school, an LDS school, and there's, you know, there could be somebody come in and try to take it over and have political statements or something, and be broadcasting. This, you know, BYU TV is around the world, really.
Yeah.
But it was explained to me that all media stations were on some serious lockdown. So it's surprising to me that, you know, I could start a car washing business and rent out some space
and
then maybe hijack the radio.
Well, the unfortunate that's the tough part is we have these doors here that we just leave open.
Yeah.
And from now on, those will have to be. Those will have, the on air portion, the podcast studio, and then the on air studio over there will have to be. They will kind of have to be on lockdown because you're right. There was always a concern of just a random person maybe coming in to see that business, and then they wander over here and start talking. So yeah, the doors are going to have to start being. We have to change our way of life. You know, we were living like cowboys here in the wild, wild west, and now we have to actually mind our P's and Q's a bit. Lock the doors, make sure all of our studios are secure. So it is going to be, you know, a different journey for us.
I wonder what the street value is of somebody rolling in and hacking Football 52 and putting out an episode of their own. I wonder what a Montana State fan would pay.
Oh, yeah.
To have somebody hack into a Football 52.
You know what?
we torpedo the Bears podcast.
We think it's crazy, but we've had weird stuff happen in the past.
Sure.
At our old building in downtown, we had to put locks on those doors too, like full on locks. You couldn't get in if somebody didn't walk over to the door and manually let you in, because people want to get in and they want to get to those microphones.
Yeah.
They want to jump in on a show. They want to see if they can get on. I can't tell you how many people have stopped us, you know, right outside the building or whatever. And it's sometimes it's homeless people, but it's a lot of times it's just people that are having a fight with the city or something. It's like, I need to get on right now and talk about what's going on with the city. It's wild. So yeah, we gotta be careful now. We're gonna start hiring guards, especially with this podcast.
Well, I'm anxious to meet your new neighbors.
I guess I am. we had to break the news to Micah. You met him, of course.
I mean, they're coming. So
it sounds like
at this point, make the best of it.
Got to share the kitchen and everything. So our way of life is going to be threatened for sure.
We're going to be in here microwaving fish.
Coach, I want to just give a quick update on the light situation. But it does sound like the lights are a go. Now I'm wondering if they're a go as soon as this fall. It's such an exciting time. Are we going to be able to get those done by that first game of the season, potentially?
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I've mentioned to you before, you know, from Andy Feinstein, Darren Dunn, those guys, they don't get out in front of their skis. You know, like they wouldn't be letting this out at the level that it is if we were not going to have it this year. It would be a major disappointment for the boys on the team because they're aware of it now. You know, it's out there. So. But no construction has started yet, and we haven't made any type of official press release yet. We've kind of responded to media. I say we. I'm talking about our, you know, my bosses, my administrators. They've responded to media, indicated that it's in the works. Donors are expecting it to be this year, and they've stepped forward in a major way. So that's kind of the best answer I can give. Is I just have complete faith in those that are making this happen. Now it really is between a major lighting company, a Musco, which does the majority of pro and college, big time college stadiums, have a ton of experience, and then Nate Reinhart on campus is he's the director of really all facilities and all construction, and with his, you know, construction background, he'll be that liaison that's kind of facilitating. A third-party entity coming in and building something on campus. So it's really just totally out of my hands, and I'm just trusting that it's coming. I have no concern. Is that a fair way to say it?
I think so, yeah. And you know, other people that I've talked to throughout the community or whatever that are kind of in the know are like, yeah, this is going to happen. Yeah. So it sounds like, yeah, it would be a shock at this point if the lights don't come up for that first game, for that first home game of the season.
Right. And you know, at that point, you know, with the typical fall weather in Colorado, we are going to be having majority of the season will be night games. And then obviously, the ability to be picked up by television stations now, you know, it triples our opportunity to have television entities pick up our games. Because in the past, even if the Root Sports or the, you know, whatever cable contract, I think Scripps right now has got most of the Big Sky, they would only have kind of one window to pick up a UNC game, and UNC not being generally the top billing in the conference needs to have as many windows as possible. So I think, yeah, we could see quite a few night games every year for multiple reasons. I do think it's going to be much more popular with our students, and that's a big subset of our fan base that we haven't had at games.
Well, we talked about the student side of it. Maybe this was off the air, but you know, just for the student side, being able to go to a night game that's at 6 o'clock leads right into them being able to go out and do their thing after the fact. Sometimes having a 1 o'clock game, who knows that if it's a Saturday, it's hot, whatever. Yeah. You know how people are. If you can give them that perfect environment that kind of just leads them in. It's like, okay, students, here you go. Tailgate at 3, game at 6, game's over. You're going out after 9, and you're doing your thing. Yeah. That actually, I think that bodes really well for the student scene. Coach, let me ask you this. I've been here a while. I came up to UNC in 2005. And obviously no lights, and for so long, you know, as a student there was a coach, and then when I was doing media, I've been through two coaches, and now we're having lights here. Can I just ask this, why now? What's changed about the program and everything that has finally led us to, hey, we're going to be able to do this thing?
So that's a really interesting question because one of the things that I have to really be careful about is finding the balance between coaching the team and coaching or pushing or managing upward on the administration. I mean, those are my bosses, and what they decide, I'm 100% behind. Mm-hmm. The same as I expect my assistant coaches and players to be. You know, if I decide we're starting practice at a certain time, you know, there may be some discussion leading up to that decision, but once it's decided, I expect 100% buy-in because anything else, any kind of hard feelings or moping or pouting or complaining is leading us in the wrong direction. And so I will reciprocate that expectation to my bosses. When they make a decision, I'm 100% behind it. But it's also very much a part of my job as somebody who has taken a school without, you know, a school at the bottom of the resource pool in the big sky, a school at the bottom of the winning tradition, and taking them to the very top of this conference, knowing what to push for and what's important. And, you know, at Southern Utah, it was some type of winter practice facility. It doesn't have to be an indoor facility, but at least something that we could scrape. Mm-hmm. And so, I was insistent, adamant, on my own, trying to raise money, coming out of my own pocket, looking for just a strip of turf that we could scrape. And we got that done. You know, we got a turf field installed. And now we could train year-round. And that was a critical part to us achieving success. And here, it's the lights. And I don't know why. I don't know. I would love to have a record, a written record, video record, audio record of when these decisions were made. Like every school in the state has lights.
Yeah.
High schools have lights. All the high schools in the state. Like there's a reason why lights and football go together. And it really does impact the visual feel of a game for the players and the fans.
It does. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with day games, but not being able to have a night game, particularly early in the season, has really hurt our ability to draw fans, our ability to draw recruits, our ability to host a compelling visual product and build a fan base over time. And so last season, I was prepared to take a significant portion of our operating budget and put it into a one game with lights. And I was pretty adamant about this and used strong language with our administration because I said, if the university hasn't or doesn't see this as a major priority, then I need to teach the university how big this is going to be. And I believe that we will make the money back in one game of ticket revenue and donations after that when people see what's possible for the community.
Yeah.
When restaurants and hotels and fans see what's possible for a night game, and my boss has said in with all the cuts we're making right now, if you spend that kind of money on something that public, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny, and we don't advise it. And so when that decision was made or you know strong guidance, I'm 100% behind my bosses. I understand the chain of command, but I really think that's what got the wheels turning was how strongly I felt about that.
That you were willing to take out of your own resources and try this just to show a proof of concept.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, I've been willing, you know, when I came in here, we talked about building this the right way, not being in a hurry, not looking for a quick fix, not going to the portal. Like I've put my record on the line, my reputation. Darren Dunn and our administration has backed me on that, gave me a contract extension before I had ever even won a game because they could see things moving in the right direction. And, you know, so I have to give all of that back to them. But I need support. I need this for this to be a football school. It is not the idea that there have been 6, 7, 8 coaches through here in a row that don't know what they're doing in football. That's BS. They're, you know, this university, when we win here, it's going to be the whole university. And it's my job to make sure and recognize that, but also it's my job to help encourage that and push and talk about and propose the things that I think that we need to win. And if the answer is no, I'm not going to let that hold us back. You know, when I interviewed, one of my common lines is, I just need water and sunlight. You know, like I can make this team win. But if we all want to be at it together and we want to truly find the ceiling of this place, it's going to take more than that.
Well, that's kind of I think that's the nature of anything, nature of business, whatever, where you get people like yourself. I think you're one of those rare coaches because you're shoveling snow and you're working out. Like, that stuff is so admirable, and I think that's why this community loves you so much. But you start off with, I just need water. I just need to get going. But then when you're here, you start to see the potential. It's more of a positive. It's like, I think, you know, there's more that we can get from this football program that would actually help the college as well, just the overall university. So, yeah, when you start, it's like, yeah, I just need water. We just need a place to practice football. We need an actual place to play. But then as you start to see, you know, last year we're starting to see some of that success, and I just have to wonder if you start to see that too, going, okay, there's more buy-in. We're starting to hear more and more from people. I heard it on our end here at the station, where then you go, we have to capitalize on this. Now we have to build on some of that momentum. And night games, people that don't get football will probably never understand it unless they go. But people like us, you know, we play high school football. We play on Friday nights. There's something about that buildup throughout the day to that night game. So it is kind of cool to see how you've evolved here as far as what you're wanting from this program here at the university.
Absolutely. And I'll take it down one more level, so to speak. Just like I'm trying to manage upward and propose and strive and try to help our university realize what we need from a resource standpoint. As our players buy in and get bigger and stronger and more committed, they inspire me. And so even like with my staff, I've said several times this spring, you know, to the staff behind closed doors, man, we're good enough to win.
Hmm.
Nothing's going to change my mind on that. So we've got to deliver. And if we're losing with creativity, I got a problem with that, because I believe we can line up and block and tackle. And so our staff is really feeling a lot of pressure right now. And we haven't really had that, because, you know, I think we have had to be creative and find ways to win and put, you know, fewer players than some schools have, fewer good players in the top positions to win. And we're trying to rely on that. And now I feel like across the board, we have winning players at every position. And it is incumbent upon us as a staff to make sure that we win. And a big part of that is, yeah, there's always some creativity. There's always some art to play calling and play design. But I believe that we could go out in a game in the Big Sky and say, here's what we're going to do to you today.
Mm-hmm.
Try to stop us.
Yeah.
And I want my coaches to feel that way.
Well, I get this sense that obviously I've got this sense from you from day one. You know, hey, this is the way we're going to do things. It's going to be a slow process, but we are going to build confidence here. And we truly believe that with this plan, we're going to succeed. I see more of an openness from you, from the coaching staff, from the administration that I didn't see, certainly not going to college. I mean, I was writing for the Mirror for a bit, but I didn't really experience working with any of the staff. And I'm not knocking any of the previous staff with this statement, but you talk about Darren Dunn, you talk about John Kitzman. These guys are setting meetings with community people and having conversations about ways they can get buy-in, ways they can grow. And that, to me, that plus the football side of things is something that they can be small things that turn into such giant things. And there's just so much, I feel so much more of a buy-in from the overall entity at UNC to branch out, push out into the community.
I definitely feel that too. And I hope I've been a part of that. You may not remember, but I know, because, you know, I had a plan from day one, and you were at my opening press conference.
Yeah.
And the goal was always to change a community through football, because I have lived that. And that's how I know and remember that I said that. I don't remember every word that I said, but there were a few themes that I wanted to make sure and share. And I wanted to change a community. And you can't change this community without doing it the community way and articulating that vision from start to finish, right? Like, nobody's going to if I build this team with transfer portal kids and I find a few donors, I find my Mark Cubans and we just pay the kids and they win. And then, you know, I move on and leave to something with a bigger salary or something like that. The community buy-in and pride in that is going to be more like, I think, enthusiasm for the moment. Not that we built this the Greeley way, the yeah. Weld County way, the Northern Colorado way, the Colorado way, right? And, you know, this community has a lot of pride. This community has a lot of diversity. And this community is kind of like an outlier in the state, you know, like geographically and from a population standpoint. But we've got, you know, it's not exactly rural either. And I think that there's a certain mindset to being successful in your business and your career as a Greeley person, as a Weld County person. And I've attempted to build the program in that way and articulate it every step of the way, including to my bosses. When you talk about Kits and Kitsman and you talk about Darren Dunn, and like I've communicated to them every step of the way how we're trying to do this and how I see it coming together. And I feel complete and total support and buy-in from them, win or lose. That's not going to last forever because I've made indications. I've made promises. I have expectations, and they have those expectations too. But the idea that we could do it overnight with transfer portal recruiting or outspending our peers, that never was an option.
It's exciting to see it, honestly, because – and again, without knocking previous coaches, because I've had – on and off, up and down relationships with a lot of coaches that have came and went through UNC, and even good coaches now that are out. I've talked about Jeff Linder, who's an assistant coach at Texas Tech now, and I still to this day have a good relationship with him. But coach, I got to tell you, he might even be the first to say, like, he likes the coaches. It's coaches part more than anything. You know, the X's and O's and the recruiting, all that that goes into it. I don't know that he loved the NIL world, because when he was at Wyoming, I think there was a lot of frustration going on. But what I didn't see from some of those guys, and it's not, again, a knock on Linder, it was more of a, why aren't people coming to games? Why is this community not buying in? I've asked that question a lot. Like, why is this community not buying in? You and several of these coaches that are on staff are maybe asking the same question, but you're saying, how do we fix that? What are things that we can do to get this community really excited about our football program outside of wins? You know, wins are going to help, obviously, but there's even more to that. Smiley's been very successful. Lindsay Oates has been very successful, and it still can be difficult. But the buy-in that I see from the coaches and then the administration, it just seems like there is a growth happening here these last couple of years at the University of Northern Colorado. There's no question.
Yeah. Interesting for you to see it that way. I don't even think about the number of fans as anything other than a reflection of our success. You know, mm-hmm. So I would never ask that question. I can remember, again, you know, it's looking back a long time ago, but there are so many parallels. My first big home win as a head coach at Southern Utah was against Youngstown State, which is a national power in FCS football. And there weren't 400 people there. Mm. I mean, it was really, really an eye-opener, because I was looking forward to that game for a long time. Youngstown State's coming to Cedar City. How did we even get this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we got them, and we won, and it was an awesome moment for the team and the players, but nobody was there to share it with us almost. It was not much more than just parents, maybe 400 people. A few short years later, you know, we begin to win, and it's a 6,000-seat stadium, and we've got 6,000. And then for what became the Big Sky Championship game against Northern Arizona in 2015, 6,000-seat stadium, 10,000 people. Hmm. It was an unbelievable environment. And, yeah, talk about night games. So it was like – it was about 10 degrees and a night game. But we hoisted the Big Sky Championship trophy at the end, and what a feeling. You know, it was the only the opponent that was cold on that night.
Well, again, in the night game feel, if you're just not a sports person, you don't get it. I'm upset because Saturday the Nuggets start their playoff series. They're going up against Minnesota on Saturday. Their game is at 1:30. And there's something to me, not just about going to night games, but also about viewing night games. It's people got busy lives, you know, people are running around. We talked a lot about the youth, you know, youth parents running around with their football kids throughout the day. It's harder to get to UNC games. They're Bears fans. They want to go, but they can't go until finally everything's done. And then bam, it's the focus. The spotlight is on that night game. I always look forward to the night games because that's when the most, when I think more people are shutting it down and just the more of that focus goes into it. So it is a big deal. Plus, just being at night, the lights shining, all that stuff, there's something powerful about a night game, and that's what that, that's what these lights are going to do for this community.
Visually, there's such a difference maker, but you said, as you said it, everything's done. We have, you know, my assistant coaches are of that age where they've got young kids playing sports, and we would have 10, 15 kids, and including mom, older siblings that could not come to our games, could not come and see their dad coach a game because they were playing their own sports. And that's, you know, these night games now in the fall are going to alleviate a lot of that. And a huge subset, I think, of the Greeley population, like we're in a community this size, and let's say this is about 200,000 in terms of just, you know, the kind of the Windsor, Evans, Eaton, kind of all this area around here, about 200,000 people or so. That's almost unique in the Big Sky to have kind of a rural setting, regional comprehensive. Like obviously Sacramento State has a big population base, but they're also – there's a lot going on in Sacramento.
Yeah.
You know, the awareness of a UNC game in this area with this 200,000 people, it should be easy to win and start filling this stadium and thinking about expansion. And by easy, I mean to see it, to see the progression, not easy to actually win. But so that is what I envision happening here. And a huge part of that is going to be, I mean, if we're talking about who's interested in football, the youth football players.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands of youth football players that can't come to our game and their families. And this is going to alleviate that.
Can you see – this is a dumb question, but from Highway 34, are you going to be able to see these lights from Highway 34?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Because these are some really high-tech LED lights that are super focused on the field of play.
So it won't be like – okay, like a high – because a lot of times high schools, you can see – you can drive around northern Colorado and every 10 miles or so you can – oh, there's a football game going on over there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the sight lines are, you know, visually with trees and elevations.
I don't
and
know.
Stuff like
I'm
that.
Just trying to put it in my brain and
think
of it. Yeah,
I'm certain if you had enough elevation, you would see the glow going on. But I'm told that these are – the lights we're getting are, you know, the kind that can change colors, you know, pulsate to music and all the cool things that are going on.
If there was a – okay, so lights are here. Someone had asked me this the other day. Maybe it was on my regular show, Coach, about – you know, hey, the lights are exciting and this is part of a building traditions. And is there something in your mind that you can think of? Because I was thinking of this the other day. You know, Rocky started up. They had their home opener last week. It was not good. But there's things about Coors Field that you just go, win or lose, it's Coors Field. A Rockies dog, you know, or having a beer and a hot dog at a Rockies game. There's just something about that. Is there something in your mind that you think of, like how to build up those game day traditions? Because when you go to the night games, obviously there's going to be excitement around there. Are there things like that that you've ever thought of? Like, is there a certain food? Is there a certain thing that we can do to make something our tradition that we really blow up and make it ours?
I think we've got the best that I've been around in John Kitzman. And, you know, I wasn't part of the hire. I didn't know him. I didn't sit on any interviews or anything like that. So I've just completely just seen him now in his job. And, you know, like the care, the concern, the passion that he has, the way he kind of, you know, he has a whole staff. It's bigger than mine. You know, when he has staff meetings, I see them in there. In one of the administrative meeting rooms, and there's 20 people in there or more, and campus partners, entities from across campus sitting in on this type of planning. And then John will hit me up about these ideas, you know, what kind of helmet sticker we're wearing, the uniform color, details about tailgating and promotions and ticket sales that I wouldn't have the bandwidth to think of all that and have expectations. So like – it's not even on my radar as a worry because I know that those things are going to happen because he kind of has those types of visions. So I think it would be a really compelling question to
for
ask
John.
Him is,
yeah.
is to look ahead 24 months. Okay, we have a night game tradition now. We're winning football games. What is it that the 14-year-old, the 12-year-old kid is that's coming over to the game? What is it that they're saying is exciting about the UNC game, right? Is it a certain hot dog or something like that? I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. Like having the reason I brought this up, you bring up we're talking about the lights and how you're going to have ability to have them go with the music or something. I mean, I see all these game day traditions and they're so much fun and they always involve lights typically. So being able to build something around that, you also want to be careful with it. If you have, I've seen some actually up north. Where they have a thing they do, and you remember this, in the fourth quarter, it's called their fourth quarter chaos or canvas chaos. And it's a great concept, Coach, if you're winning or it's close.
Yeah.
If you're losing and it's not particularly close and you still do it. So those are things where I think you have to be really aware of that. Mm-hmm. Like if you have these cool, awesome game traditions, you want to try to be, okay, when do we not pull this out because it's going to be almost upsetting to people. I think you got to be careful with that.
So I experienced this at Wisconsin, the jump around, the fourth quarter jump around.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When we were there and winning, and the most enthusiastic people jumping around were us, the BYU players.
Yeah.
And then that happened this year at Canvas where it's the fourth quarter, we're winning and not expected to win, and our players were really enjoying that moment, and you could tell that the Colorado State players were kind of, you know, trying to enjoy the moment, but mm-hmm. also like, hey, we got a game on the line.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling loose right now, and that's just human nature. You know, we've been on the other side of that. I know what that feels like. To know that you need to feel excited and relaxed in the moment, but there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I am curious to see all the game day stuff that comes with this. Like you said, with John and his staff. And how creative they can get. That'll be a lot of fun too, Coach. On the player side, obviously, spring ball, you guys are in the midst of that right now. You had a scrimmage last week. How did that go? Anything stick out to you? And we've been diving into our positions here.
Yeah.
So all the stuff you've taught me here, I don't know. Maybe we're going to throw all that information away. We'll see how it goes. But how did Saturday go?
I'm really trying to find a balance between how much do I let out there that I'm excited about because – potentially are opposing coaches and, you know, fans listening, you know.
I've been told that there have been opposing whatevers listen to this thing.
So, I've been clear from day one, we want to recruit and develop the biggest team, the biggest, strongest team in the conference. That will be our first step towards success. And that starts with offensive line and defensive line. So I feel like we have a very good foundation for offensive line and running backs right now. And the running backs will obviously benefit from a very good offensive line. And so our top five guys, I told our O-line coach, six plays and they're out.
Yeah.
During the week, grind them out. You know, they need a lot of work. It's not that they've arrived, but we're not risking them. The chance of losing one of them versus the reward of playing – how much better are they going to get for the first scrimmage of the spring for one day? And so, you know, we challenged our offensive line. You got six plays and you're out. And we took it right down the field and scored in the six plays. And
wow. That
was huge.
Yeah, that is huge.
For those guys to get out. And the whole team was kind of aware of it. And so the defense took it as a challenge. Defense had some really good bounce back moments. And I feel like our defensive line is very solid too, but I really feel like that in terms of, you know, what has elevated the most on this team, it's the offensive line. I think UNC, even from the time I was an opposing coach in the conference, UNC has always had good players all over the field. There's always, you know, some good players, good athletes, capable players, capable of making plays and disrupting your plan. Offensive line has been where UNC has not had, you know, five, six, seven guys that are all winning players. And I believe that that's the biggest ascension that our program has made. I'm really excited about that.
How I think I've asked you this before. I always think about it during spring ball because you're going against each other. So if the offense looks good, does that mean you're going, oh, man, we got to get the defense right. And then the defense makes a play. Oh, man, the offense is not looking good. How do you, like, there's got to be battles going on in your brain during spring ball, because one second you're excited about, oh, the offensive line, we went down, pushed dudes around. What does that mean about the defense? How does that work? Because I know it's all early and stuff, but in your brain, you got to be fighting some demons there.
Yeah, as coaches, it's really, you know, that we have to make a decision on every good or bad play. Was it execution, or did we get physically beat in that moment? You know, the execution of the play, alignment and assignment is something anyone could do. You and I, at our age and our lack of athleticism relative to that team,
I did beat
Tanner. We can go out and do alignment and assignment.
Yeah.
Okay, now technique is the next one. And there's some coaching involved in that as well, but there's also strength and speed, you know, to actually pull off the correct technique, right? And then there's, you know, did we get outsmarted somehow? Did our play not work for a reason that we need to learn and get better from? And so that's really more the evaluation. That's why it can be so frustrating for football coaches to talk to a fan who's kind of trying to give you some advice, like, you know, like, hey, coach, on that third down, you know, you ran a zone defense, and I would have ran a man defense. You got to tighten up the coverage. And like, well, yeah, we did some man on the other third downs, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And in hindsight, you can always be right. You know, if you blitzed and it worked, you look great. If you blitzed and it didn't work, you shouldn't have blitzed. And that kind of stuff is like completely off of a coach's radar. It's alignment, assignment, technique, and then you also kind of try to look at, okay, did the design of our play, does that need some tweaking, some adjustment, some different emphasis?
Does that almost maybe when you're going back and watching film and you see a guy, he just mentally blew his assignment. But is that almost one of those things where it's like you'd rather that? Because now, okay, we can sit down with him and say, here's what went wrong. If a guy's just getting smoked out there, there's only so much the coaching staff can do. So when you see the mental lapses in spring, not maybe, you know, week six or whatever, but in the spring, is that something that maybe is like, okay, that's actually a good problem to have because we can fix it.
Yeah. And it's also, okay, how many of them are happening, and are they happening at a particular position? Maybe the position coach needs to change some things up in the way that they're teaching, right? Mm. My coaches know this. Like, I don't want to hear, so-and-so is a good player, he just doesn't know his plays. Well, what am I paying you for?
Mm. Interesting.
Whose job is it to teach him the plays?
Yeah.
You know, I want for my kids to have a math teacher that inspires them. Nobody, like, I don't think a lot of kids that grow up and, you know, love math. You know, somebody sparks that in them. Somebody spark a teacher with abilities to spark an interest, and someone who knows how to teach, they're the ones that reach them. And that's what my coaches need to be. And we work hard on finding ways to do that and develop that.
Yeah. No, I think that's an interesting note too, because you're also, hey, that gives us an opportunity to put a little bit more of a press on the assistant coaches too. If we're seeing a guy make the same mistake over and over again in a particular position group, then yeah, we have to have a deeper conversation with the position coach. Because that's what they're paid to do, right?
Exactly. And the coordinator, you know, like if we're making mistakes, are we doing too much? Like we shouldn't, you know, mental errors, we should be, if it's multiple players at a position making the same mental error, it might be the position coach. If we have too many mental errors by the whole offense or defense, then it's, you know, it might be the coordinator. So that's why that alignment and assignment is the place to start. And if the alignment and assignment were correct, and, you know, a guy kind of gets beat physically, then to go back to your original question, if it's us against us, if it's the Bears against the Bears, then you kind of, okay, well, you kind of put a tally on the board. This player beat that player on that play. Okay, very good. Now we're looking in the ensuing plays or days. Does the player that got beat come back and win some matchups? And that would be the ideal spring, is that you have a minimal number of mental errors, a minimal number of alignment and assignment breakdowns, and that there's a balance between the guys physically winning their so quote unquote one-on-one matchups.
From what I've saw on the rare occasions I get out there to practice, coach, it just everything seems so tight, like a receiver versus a defensive back, and it's just tight, and whoever wins barely wins. And I always just remember walking away from that because I hear you guys cheering. It's like, yeah, perfect job here. And then you got to work with this guy. It is a tough job because a lot of these dudes are just neck and neck. There's like fierce competition. But even if one guy, even though it's close every time, but he's winning the majority, then the other guy is really struggling. When I look at it and go, yeah, those are two great athletes going at each other there. But you guys might be looking at it as, but you're losing that battle, yeah. Even though it was very close every time.
Truly is a game of inches, right?
And so in so many aspects.
Yeah, the expectation would be, I've said this before and here, and you know, with Coach Prime, when I was getting into coaching, so many of my training films would be NFL films that I would get a hold of, you know, and there are, you take the best players in any sport, and they've got a lot of lowlights. They've been beat many, many times, and he would be one of them, probably the best corner to ever play. There are a lot of touchdowns when you have a career that long, a lot of mm-hmm. touchdowns scored over the top of what we now call Coach Prime.
Yeah.
And I mean that as a compliment. The greatest to ever play the game keeps coming back and finding ways to get his wins, you know, more often than the guys who are not the greatest players in the game. And that's kind of – we share those type of stories with our players. You hear it all the time about Michael Jordan, like how many shots did Michael Jordan miss in his career?
Yeah.
Thousands, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it happens.
Well, it's like watching – we're knee-deep in watching some baseball these days. And, you know, there's amazing hitters. But every time they go up to the plate, I don't expect to hit. Yeah. You know, it's like they're going to hit it at some
point.
Three
out of ten puts you in the Hall of Fame.
And that's pretty darn good. Yeah. It's so impossible. But that's sports because everybody's going at you. I mean, you have an elite hitter. You have on the other side, it's just as elite starting pitcher or closer.
Yeah.
So they're all going at each other. So that part of the game is so much fun. That's what I love about football, that one-on-one just battle back and forth.
100%. And that's one of the really fun things about spring practice and about going against each other. And just about the time where it gets really frustrating and like we need to play against somebody else, spring ball's over and you're moving into summer training and you got the guys kind of take a break from actual football. And again, we're working on the skills for the most part over the summer and preparing from a physical standpoint.
Coach, what's the next week or so look like on the spring football side of things for you guys?
So we're rare, if not unique, in our schedule. We actually mimic an in-season schedule. So we are going to have four straight weeks of exactly what we would do during the season. They follow the exact same schedule. I want them to get used to that. I want them to feel the pressures academically, socially, the pressures to get enough sleep, get their meals in, nutrition, lifting. And so we have, you know, I'll just start from today since we sit here on a Wednesday. Wednesday's a really difficult work day practice. There's a lot of work, a heavy lift, a lot of meetings. It's one of our most intense days of work. Thursday, we start to taper that down quite a bit. Friday is a walkthrough. Saturday morning will be scrimmage, which is kind of a mock game, right? Sunday is their day off, and then Monday is another walkthrough with some lift and some running to kind of start work out some of the kinks. And then Tuesday we come back at it with a work day very similar to Wednesday.
I love it. We're here. It's mid-April. We're going to be done with spring ball before you know it. We'll roll through the summer with these podcasts, and then next thing you know, we'll be playing football in the fall, and maybe. Probably under the lights. So excited about that, Coach.
Under the lights, excited about that. We want to just, you know, keep players as healthy as they can, but get a lot of work done right now. We've had a couple of injuries here. I don't want to get into the names just yet because there's still some decisions to be made on that. But that's one of the really difficult parts. It's part of what makes football exciting and part of why you want to be able to say when you're my age, I played college football.
Yeah.
Because people know that it's dangerous and it's hard.
Oh, yeah.
And but at the same time, and so when you have 100 players, you're gonna go through that with some of them, like the individual part of actually getting hurt and being out for a period of time. It's kind of excruciating to see.
Unfortunately, you almost have to expect it, though, right? Any practice, anything, you know, you're gonna lose dudes.
It is, yeah. The players understand it, and again, it's part of what makes football special. When you know they're. There are people out there that want football players as employees, and people in their lives, and there's tremendous leadership across the country with ex-football players, ex-college football players, and people doing amazing things for the community, in part because of the lessons they've learned and the battles they've faced and the, you know, the danger. It's controlled danger, but it's danger.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if there's one thing you and I can, you know, pray for over the next few weeks, it's like we want to get a lot done. We want to prepare our team. That requires some work and some risk, but we also hope to have as few, serious injuries as possible.
Coach, next week, I want to get into the receiver, talk about the receiver room a little bit if we can. Also, how big of a task that is, because you had some pretty good wideouts last season that, of course, we know entered that transfer portal. So I would love to pick your brain a bit about that position and who you see. Maybe it's a collective group of guys that are going to kind of hope to make up for some of those stats and everything. So I'm excited to go over that with you next week.
That position's coming together nicely, and it came together in a way that that we really haven't set out to build the team, but we had some Colorado kids that wanted to come back home and play with former teammates and guys they know and had heard good things about the direction of UNC, and they've made us a lot better. And of course, we've got our guys that we've recruited and developed to be in that mix. So I think it'll be a really compelling kind of discussion on where we're at with that.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I want to get into that receiver room because there's just so many storylines there for sure. But yeah. Before I let you go, Coach, Nuggets Timberwolves on Saturday. Nuggets going to win that game?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. You know. That's all I needed. I'm getting nervous.
I'm Colorado. How was I going to say?
They all go 16-0. They all just Avalanche starts Sunday, Nuggets start Saturday, and how about they just win every game in the playoffs? That's the plan, right?
Yeah, I fumbled right there because like I was going to say a bad word. I'm as Colorado as can be. I was going to say the more vulgar version of that. So because like I'm just all in, you know, and I didn't grow up in Colorado, wasn't aware of anything here, hadn't been here all that often, and now like to be just like fully immersed in all the local teams and what's going on. It's been a cool chapter of my life to be a fan of teams that I really hadn't paid attention to.
It's fun for me as a sports talk show host, because not only do we have all these exciting pro teams, we have teams like yours that we're excited to see what the future looks like as we built on some of that momentum from last season. Coach, always appreciate your time, my friend, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you, Brady.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.